We're in the season of fear and dread, otherwise known as tax season. But there are some changes in the tax code this year that could ease the burden and even put some money back in your pocket. We take a look at those, and a startling report on Americans and savings has experts worried nearly half of people in the U.S. have $500 or less in their savings account. We look at what can be done about savings and investing during these inflationary times and how those approaching retirement can cope. And a recent agreement with the National Association of Realtors could fundamentally change how Americans buy and sell their homes. Could the New Deal make real estate more affordable for consumers? We ask an expert. Fox 11 News in Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News in Depth. We're coming up on that day that everyone loves, right? Tax day, and no grace period this year like there was last year. For those of you who are still working on your taxes, we've got some last-minute tips. And for those of you who have already filed, good job. And stay tuned because this information will help you as well. Joining us now to talk about some tax law changes for this year is certified financial planner and professional money expert, Shanabu Hindert. And good to see you. Thanks for joining us, Shanabu.
Thank you, Hal.
Well, whether you... What's that?
I said I call it the tax season shuffle.
Is that what you call it? Well, it is sort of the tax season shuffle, isn't it? And whether you do your own taxes or you hire a professional, there are some important changes we all need to know about. So first of all, if I understand it correctly, you believe that our current battle with inflation could actually help come tax time somehow?
A little bit. There are some areas of sunshine. So standard deductions went up a bit from last year. So for single filers, it's now $13,800, which is up from the $12,550 in 2022. And if you are filing jointly, the standard deduction is up to $27,600, up from $25,100 last year.
So that changed a couple of thousand, the standard deduction.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about tax brackets and how they may have adjusted.
So tax brackets have adjusted with inflation. The top tax rate remains the same at $37,000, but income thresholds have increased about 7%. So that should put a little bit of money extra in our pockets.
Yeah, and I think that's an important issue because people are always looking for how to put an extra buck in their pocket. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that, but just adjust for us what's happened with IRA contributions. I understand those have increased a little bit.
Those have increased as well. The 2023 limit is $6,500. And for those that are over the age of 50, you can do an extra $1,000. If you're self-employed and you qualify for a SEP IRA, that is now up to $66,000.
And so just backtracking for a second on the tax brackets, the top one you said was $37,000?
37%. That hasn't changed.
So 37%. That stayed the same. Well, what about health savings?
Health savings, if you are able to contribute to a health savings account, I would absolutely do it. It's triple tax advantage. So you get a deduction for the contributions, you get tax-free growth, and then you get tax-free use of that money as long as it's on qualified distributions. And that for an individual is up to $3,650. And if you're a family, it's up to $7,300. And they give you an extra bonus if you're over the age of 55, you can contribute an extra $1,000 as a catch-up. Again, that's a triple tax advantage account.
You know, it's funny because you sort of speak the language, so it's easy for these words and numbers to flow right out of your mouth for some of us like me that have a hard time adding two and two. It kind of goes in here and out there. What's sort of the main message here with regard to how we can do better this year than we may have done, say, last year or the year before?
If you use bigger services like a TurboTax, they will walk you through what tax advantages qualify for, or lean on a CPA. Do not tackle this yourself because it could cost you thousands of dollars when you're filing, and you want to make sure as we are spending more money in our day-to-day lives that you're really maximizing the benefits that you can have when you're filing. So don't tackle this alone.
And there's also the issue of making a mistake. And sometimes when we do things ourselves, we might overlook something. We might not quite get it just right. That can cost in penalties, right?
Absolutely. And also with these tax laws changing so frequently, the bigger firms are going to have software that's adjusted to it. But if you're going off of information you have last year, it can be outdated. So you definitely want to lean on resources for this.
Well, one of my favorite areas is going green. I think that's a valuable approach. And also there's a tax benefit for going green. What are some of those benefits?
There's energy efficient home improvement credits that you could qualify for. So a credit is a one-to-one dollar for dollar tax refund versus a deduction. So if you qualify for these, I would absolutely go for them. There's a residential clean energy credit. There's a clean vehicle credit. So anything that you've done green, see what they are. Again, don't tackle this alone. Make sure that you're utilizing either professional help or online software to see what you qualify for.
And to be even more specific and maybe get into the weeds a little bit, we're talking about putting in low flow water systems for your grass and weeds and replacing them with boulders and succulents and putting solar panels up on the roof and things like that, right?
Yes, and they have an immediate cost to you for this savings down the road and even for natural savings that you want to make sure that you're getting that money put back in your pocket. Because many people did this because when someone's installing solar, they're kind of using that as a selling point that you get this credit. So make sure that you are aware of everything that you've done. Kind of look under every rock for any extra dollars you can get back.
And let me just ask you, and this one, I need a brief answer. Child tax credits are going down a little bit. Well, what's up with that?
They are going down. So during COVID, they had increased credit back to you. It is back down to $2,000 per child under the age of 17. That was as of last year. And it's refundable up to $1,600. There could be a retroactive refund, but don't wait to file your taxes. Do it before April 15th.
And before we run out of time on this segment, just state, local tax deductions, where do we stand on all those things?
That's the same. This is the big bummer. So it's still capped at $10,000 for both single filers and joint filers. If you utilize the standard deduction, you don't have to worry about it. This is if you're itemizing. So that is the state and local tax is capped at $10,000.
All right, Shanaba, we have to take a break here, but you're going to be joining us again in the next segment. Shanaba, our guest this half hour, at least for two segments of it. And we'll be back with more Fox 11 News and Death, where we will talk more about your money. In this case, how to save it, how to invest it, and how much is enough. We'll tell you some pretty shocking statistics about how prepared most Americans are right now. We'll be right back. Don't go away. We're back on Fox 11 News and Death with Shanaba Hindert. Shanaba, you also wrote a book about investing. It's called Investing is Your Superpower, a step-by-step guide to creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. As I mentioned earlier, math is not my superpower, but there, you know, we've heard some troubling news lately about Americans and their financial struggles.
Yeah, this is a tough time. I think as financial planners, we talk about inflation, but we haven't seen it over the last 15 plus years. So it's kind of just gone in one ear, out the other for many people. Now we are living it and it's impacting so many people because our day-to-day expenses have just gone up and there hasn't necessarily been a correlated wage increase along with that.
You know, what's interesting though is a recent survey conducted by a banking group found that nearly half of Americans have $500 or less in their savings accounts. That's all right, $500 or less, and nearly one in four have no savings whatsoever. How did we get here? And how do we get out of that mess?
It's really important to have transparency on what you're spending. Oftentimes, what we have in our mind of what we're spending versus what we're actually spending are very different. So dig into what are your essential expenses? What do you need to have every month for your rent, your groceries, utilities, versus what are considered non-essential expenses, like ordering takeout or going to the local coffee shop? Seeing your numbers allows you to pull different levers during tough financial times But transparency is key. And there are apps to help you with this so you don't have to keep personal spreadsheets on all of your spending.
Well, how can we cope with inflation, especially people who may be on a fixed income?
If you're on a fixed income, a first thing I would do is look at government resources that may be available to you so you're not tackling this all alone, because you might have limited flexibility to do that. So another thing I would do is look at discount grocery stores and see where does it make sense to buy in bulk. You might even partner up with a friend and buy some items that have longer shelf life together and split the costs of those. The Los Angeles Department of Aging has hubs of resources to help you save costs on transportation, on medical expenses. I would utilize your resources and don't tackle this alone.
Yeah, I think that's probably a very important piece of advice, is don't tackle this alone, because it can probably be incredibly intimidating if you don't have a math mind. You know, we're still waiting for interest rates to come down. How are these high rates affecting people, especially people approaching retirement?
It's really affecting people because, again, we weren't planning for it. People might be talking about high interest rates, but for so long they were close to zero. So understanding how to kind of combat against that would be investing in more aggressive areas like stocks and not doing it blindly, working with a financial planner. And if you are retiring, you have a fixed income, and it might feel safer to invest conservatively, you want to think you could live for 25 to 30 years. So part of that money really needs to grow to keep up with inflation and to be able to tackle that higher expenses as you get older.
Now, it's not all bad news, right? For the first time in ages, you can get a savings account that actually pays something, right?
Yes. And if you are not earning 4% or higher in your savings account, look elsewhere. Many financial institutions have money market, government money market funds that are not risky, that are paying over 4%. So if you're opening up your statement and you're saying, I'm getting 1%, change it.
Right. Yeah, no, I've seen 5%, 5.5%, 6%. So, you got to shop it, right? You have to go bang on the bank door and say, what's your best rate?
Yes, and make sure they're not asking you to tie it up for long periods of times, that there's not fees associated. There are so many companies out there now that are offering these accounts free of charge, without minimum. So just ask the questions before you commit to any type of account.
But a lot of times things do have fees. So you might get a 6%, let's just say, and the fee takes you down to about 5.7 or 8. That's still good.
Yes, that's still good. But again, ask, because a lot of these fees are outdated. Larger banks are going to have the fees, but financial institutions like a Fidelity Investments, they're not going to have all of those fees involved. They're kind of, that's old news, those fees. So shop around.
Yeah. How should people adjust their investment portfolios to take advantage of the current situation?
Well, you first need to work with a financial planner. Try not to tackle this on your own, because you don't want to become so aggressive, meaning owning lots of stocks. They might beat inflation over the long term because there's growth potential, but there's a lot of volatility. So you want to take a look at, what is the plan for my money I need over the next 2 to 5 years, 5+ years, and 10+ years out? There's lots of different investments you can own, but they have other risks associated. So there's treasury inflation protected securities you might use for some money. If you're going into retirement, you might want to purchase an annuity that has an adjuster or rider to be inflation protected. So work with a financial planner that you feel comfortable with and ask these questions.
Okay, we've heard that five-letter word, C-R-Y-P-T-O, six-letter word, crypto. What's the impact there?
The impact there, I would proceed with a caution. It's considered a new asset class. It's been approved by the SEC to be included in exchange-traded funds. So there is going to be this crypto shuffle as well, where we're going to see a lot of things kind of shake out and see what's standing. So cryptocurrencies that are available this year may not be around in 5 years. So if you want to dabble in this area, I would take less than 10% of your overall assets to use, and go with the big names, big companies that have these exchange traded funds.
So the bottom line, 30 seconds, is what?
work with a professional. You're not supposed to be the expert, and come with your questions, and there are no bad questions.
All right. Shanabu Hendert, thanks so much for your knowledge, your expertise, and being with us on Fox 11 News In Depth. And coming up next, some big changes are on the horizon concerning the way we buy and sell real estate. And those changes could potentially make homeownership at least a bit more affordable. But how will that affect us and the realtors as well? We'll take a look right after this break. Don't go away. You may have heard about this news recently, a settlement with the National Association of Realtors that could change the way buyers and sellers pay commissions to real estate agents. And that could mean big savings for homeowners. To talk about that, let's bring in our real estate expert, Suzanne Cini from Innovate Realty. Thanks for joining us again, Suzanne. Good to see you.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
How does buying a home work now?
So currently, you have a listing agent that will meet with their seller and basically come up with the amount that they will, that the seller will offer for commission. So that includes their commission, and then that also includes the buyer's agent commission. So usually that's around 5 to 6%. And then that fee right now is published for all buyers agents to see online, so that they know exactly what's being offered to them by the seller.
So let me be sure I understand this. So where agents have gotten 5 to 6%, what would they actually be getting now in a negotiated sort of fee?
So usually that's divided between the listing agent and the buyer's agent. So let's say it's 5%. The listing agent and the buyer's agent will both receive 2.5% for that transaction.
Now, that's a big change, huh?
So that's the current state. What this new ruling says is basically we need more transparency around commissions, because the buyers didn't necessarily know or understand what their real estate agents were being paid or how they were being paid. So now, instead of the listing agent just handling all of that with the seller and the buyer not necessarily being involved there, commissions could potentially be negotiated with the buyer as well. They will be a little bit more looped into the process.
Yeah, I understand just a little bit of this. I sold a house last year, and I understand just a teeny tiny little bit about these fees. But how does this radically change the landscape? Is it just simply transparency? Is that just simply it?
It is around transparency. So as I mentioned previously, that number was shown to the buyer's agent only of what was being offered by the seller to sell the home, basically, and bring buyers to the home. So now, potentially, a buyer's agent may have to, depending on what the seller wants to offer, the lawsuit really was surrounding, you know, being almost assumed that commission was 2.5 for the listing agent and 2.5 for the buyer's agent. Now, potentially, that can be negotiated. It always could be. But I think, again, there's more transparency to it. And the buyer is now in the know as well. So say, for example, a seller says, you know, I only want to offer a total of 3%. And a listing agent says, well, that's my fee. So that doesn't include the buyer's agent fee. So now, potentially, that buyer's agent may have to go back to their buyer and negotiate their commission with that buyer, which is a very big change historically, because usually you don't negotiate the commission with the buyer, but it's not that you can't. So I think, again, this has always been the case. It's just been very standard to do things the way we have been doing them for quite some time. And now we might potentially see some changes there.
Well, let me kind of pose a compound question here. First of all, practically speaking, will this make buying and selling less expensive? And also, how are agents feeling about this?
Yeah, so there's a lot of concern only because, you know, there's headlines out there, right? And the headlines can be a little misleading. So one of the big headlines I've heard quite a bit is no more 6% commission, right? But that's actually not the case. So I think when you actually drill down into this, it really is business as how we should be doing business. Commissions are always negotiable. They always have been. But maybe agents need to have a little more of a tough conversation with their buyers where potentially, you know, again, buyers usually don't pay for their agent's commission. So that could affect affordability if the buyer, you know, doesn't necessarily have all of the funds that they need to. But at the end of the day, everything is negotiable. So when you're putting out your offer, you should make sure that that offer makes sense. You should be negotiating your commissions with that offer, and you should be transparent with everyone throughout the process.
You know, more and more, we tend to try to do things ourselves. Don't know how smart that is, but more and more we try to do things ourselves. So what risks do buyers take if they choose to represent themselves?
That's a great question. I mean, you just talked about it when it comes to doing your taxes yourself, right? And it's like, you could do your taxes yourself, but how is that actually going to look in the long run? And it's the same thing with attorneys and real estate agents. You know, you could definitely represent yourself, but you're really opening yourself up for a ton of risk, potentially litigation. There's a lot of paperwork involved in a real estate transaction. There's a lot of disclosures, but for a reason. The reason California does what they do is because they're really trying to protect the buyer and seller, of course. And if the buyer or seller doesn't have that protection and they're just, you know, closing up a transaction because they think they can, they're opening themselves up to a lot of risk.
It is definitely a big process. It is a big process. All right. Suzanne Cini, thanks so much for joining us again. I'm sure we'll see you again soon. And we'll be back with more Fox 11 News in depth right after this. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast, What the Hal, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's News in Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.